Welcome to the Get Together.
All over the world, there are people thinking about and creating a future of live digital events and performances.
They're disparate innovators who are artists, tech founders, nonprofits, and investors, and they need a place to gather and share ideas.
That's what the Get Together is all about.
I'm Jess, a theater creator who loves bringing people together around technology, art, and the internet.
And I'm Joe, a tech and media startup vet with over 10 years of experience growing and operating businesses.
Thanks for getting together with us. Let's dig in. We're going to NFT NYC this week.
Oh, yeah. I keep forgetting that that's happening this week. I think one part of my brain wants to avoid it altogether, and the other part's really excited about it.
That super tracks for this this podcast. If you don't know, it seems to be a week-long celebration of NFT communities and businesses here in New York, and it's everywhere, all over the city. So Joe picked out some interesting panels for us to go to that are specifically put on by a company called Stardust. It will be interesting to see what we learn this week and report back to you all. Also, hope you enjoyed our silly platform smackdown. As promised, our first episode complete with a lot of sound effects, which were super fun and stupid to make. It made me laugh while I was editing it.
Yeah, that was a great episode. And the sound effects, obviously in room, I couldn't hear them and just added them in post. Spoilers.
Yeah.
But so listening back to the episode, I just got to giggle along as if I was an audience member. I mean, like, what is this? What is this sound effect? Where did this come from?
Ding, ding, I have ding, such ding, a ding, great ding. Backstock of sound effects from all the years of making videos. So most of them, even I was like, oh, I know I have that boxing bells from this video that I did. And I know I have this womp womp, which, by the way, on the womp womp SFX.
The sad trombone.
That. Did you just say that out of nowhere?
No, that's what it's called.
I didn't know that. So I had to go looking for that one. And I didn't know what to search for in Epidemic until I got to sad. I just tried sad trombone after like 1,000 tries for that. What I thought you should search for that, which was basically like womp, womp, womp.
Yeah. Oh, that's what it's called, the sad trombone.
I had no idea.
Hilarious.
That's amazing. Well, should have called you. Would have saved me a lot of time. For today's episode, our newsletter came out last week. If you are not on the list, go to alltogethernow.live to sign up. It's once a month. I think it's pretty helpful. And we decided to do a little Tales from the Vault this month. We were sort of talking about how much really just like how close we are to really smart, well-executed, interesting instances of live digital experiences. And we were talking about how maybe we shouldn't just hog all that knowledge for ourselves. So we wrote a newsletter breaking down Miscast, which of course, you know, we just did. And we thought we might do a podcast episode today, another Tales from the Vault on a really cool and very interesting, I think, experience we helped make a reality with a really cool company called DSOA.
DSOA, which does not stand for Dance Studios of America.
No.
But rather, it's the Dance Studio Owners Association. And it's a gathering and a bringing together of all these dance studio owners to learn from each other, to swap stories, to bond and be a community. And so for this specific event, it was their Inner Circle Retreat, you know, a highly exclusive, highly sought after status and event down in Miami.
Thank you.
A very fun place to go in January of this past year. But the whole point was a 3-day retreat to, yeah, talk strategies, hear speakers, learn things, and improve one's ability to knowledge of how to strategy and tactics for running a dance studio. So it was people from all over the country, maybe even all over the world. Mm-hmm. I feel like there were some people from like Scotland or something that came over.
Yeah.
Very cool, very fun. And like we're seeing more and more, the world is going back to in-person events. We're all so excited about it, but we haven't fully left behind the idea of digital engagement, virtual events, people on the internet. Those audiences that were built up and cultivated across the past few years, they haven't gone away. And not all of them can fly across the world to go to Miami or fly across the country or even fly, you know, just down the eastern seaboard to get there. And so the head of DSOA reached out and was like, hi, I need help. We're doing this thing in Miami. There are a whole bunch of people who can't make it. We do not want to leave them out. They are part of the community. Can you help bring this event that's happening in Miami to them via the internet? And that's exactly what we did.
It's true. And I think this one's really interesting because we kind of worked in two layers that I think are relevant and hopefully will be helpful for y'all as we talk through them today, right? There was layer one, which was the task at hand, right? Which is come to this event that they already hired AV people for, plug in to all of that, and design an experience for those digital attendees inside these things we've already decided, right? That is going to be satisfactory to them, that they're going to make, is going to make them feel like they're part of the community and that they really enjoy it. But also the layer two that sort of emerged across the weekend is, you know, us, we're never ones to sort of fall back on our laurels. We started thinking about how they could actually use live digital in an ongoing manner to do more than just solve for people who couldn't make it there. Rather, how could it add to the business? So I think there's some interesting things there that we can get to towards the end as well. But I think first we go where everyone loves to go, which is the gear. It's sexy. Do you know what I mean? How'd you do it? How'd you plug in? What was going on?
Yeah, all the mechanics. Mm-hmm. And as Jess was saying, the AV teams were already hired. There was a videographer there to capture. You know, they had a camera set up in the middle of the thing, mm-hmm. pointed at the stage. Hooray, that was already there. But it wasn't explicitly rented, purchased, set up with the intention of a live stream.
Right.
Which was one little hiccup, but we'll get to that in a second. And then as well, like many venues, you know, this was in a hotel in Miami, they have their sort of tried and true, maybe even legally bound to use audio company. So, you know, that was already there and already being set up and, you know, we therefore had the component pieces to plug in. It's funny, there was a joke somewhere in there for like AV, like it's been shorthanded, you know, just audio video. Mm-hmm. It's been shorthanded in such a way that, like, in my mind, it's kind of almost lost the value of what those original words were, which is audio and video. And so to like come back to it and be like, oh yeah, like who's handling that audio and who's handling that video? It's not just the concept of AV and a whole bunch of cables that are being, you know, mapped around like Spider-Man.
Which is exactly what happened. Yeah.
But rather, it's like actually a function, right? There was a videographer. If there was a videographer there capturing, and there was a whole team to make sure that the audio sounded great, that the microphones worked, that everyone could hear, that the video had audio. And I don't know, just something about that event and going back to an in-person event, because this was, again, back in January, reminded me of like the tangibility of these things. Mm. AV isn't just like a concept. AV isn't just a, you know, a smattering of things that we have to maybe consider, which we do. But AV is actual like teams of people in audio and video.
Yeah.
All fun stuff.
Yeah.
Good teams. And live stream sits at the intersection of those two things.
Smack in the middle of all of it.
So we were lucky enough to be able to run a cable out from the main camera that was shooting the stage. Into our live switcher. So that was HDMI out directly from the camera. I can't remember what the camera was, a Sony something or other?
FS7. It was a 7, I think.
Yeah, so.
Fancy.
High quality
had
Sony
an HDMI
camera,
like out.
HDMI already. 1080p output.
Yeah.
I believe it was coming at 30 frames per second, but might have been coming at 60. So we took that via a nice long HDMI cable, a 50 footer, because that's what we needed. And it's kind of like the max range of a HDMI cable without any sort of additional amplification or powering of that cable, into our ATEM Mini, which is a fun little out of the box live switcher that has become extremely popular in the age of live streaming, made by Blackmagic Design and designed for events just like this, you know. Slightly lo-fi, not too many input live stream productions. So boom, pulled that in, HDMI. And then as well, we got an audio directly from the board from our A of that AV team that we brought as well into the ATEM Mini where we're mixing everything. And then, I don't know, Jess, if you want to talk to us a little bit about one camera is not enough.
It's true. I mean, it'll do. You know, it'll do in a pinch. But yeah, and also I wanted to, as I was listening to all that back, I wanted to just take a second to compliment the videographer that was hired for this, because for people whose real job was to capture video to be used in a sizzle reel, they were pretty chill about us and the wrench that was thrown that they were going to have to send their feed out to us. I really appreciated the way that they handled that because I have worked with fussier videographers than that in my career. So that was really nice. And we also had, we had IMAG, like the V in AV, we had that too, right? Because there were slides and in a couple of instances across the weekend, videos that the AV team from the hotel was broadcasting via IMAG, which is magnified, you know, the big screens in the front. And we had to get those into our sort of thing as well, right? Because they had the call script for that. So we didn't know when like slides should advance and all of that stuff. Do you remember how that came over to us?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's funny. In my mind right now, I'm going through the inputs on the ATEM. So input number one was camera number one. Input number two was camera number two. Input number three was presentation. Mm. So in my mind, I was like, okay, camera one. Now let's talk about camera two and then we'll get to presentation.
Oh, I see.
And then four was our overlays and stuff like that.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, so skipping back to, so just to recap, yeah, we have the fancy Sony camera coming in via HDMI. We've got video presentations being controlled by someone from the hotel, but coming into our live stream so that we can switch them. We have the audio coming in. We definitely added more cameras. We had iPhones with us. And so we added one sort of cutaway iPhone for us to play around. Oh, it wasn't even our iPhone, was it? It was my my Lumix. Mm-hmm. That's right. So we actually used, I have a Panasonic GH2. So it's like one of the older ones, but it still looks so good. We set that up on a tripod. I believe we also had HDMI straight out from that camera, right?
Yep, straight out. I think it was HDMI mini technically out of the camera, but we had a converter because we are prepared.
So many converters.
Yeah. You remember what sort of angle were we on for that shot? So we had our sort of straight on, what's that, the proscenium? What's the word that you use in the theater world?
Yeah, proscenium. Yeah, sure. The establishing shot.
It's beautiful. But then we were coming at it now from a different angle. And like, what was the logic behind setting that up?
Yeah, so when you switch, right, with cameras, you can do it as you can upgrade from one camera to two cameras as simply as having a establishing shot and a cutaway shot. And that'll do it. That turns all of a sudden your broadcast into something much more interesting and much more close to what your eyes used to watching on television. Now, of course, you can add more cameras and have different incidences, angles of incidence for cutaways and audience cameras and all of that stuff, which we certainly got talking about across the weekend. But yeah, at the end of the day, one cutaway does pretty nicely. So I'm terrible with angles, but I think that was like halfway between 180. Like, what is that? I can't do math. 90. I don't know. It's like a 45 degree angle, I feel like.
Cool. Coming in. Yeah. How do you think about it if not through angles? You're just looking at it and being like, that feels different enough from the establishing shot that if we cut to it, it won't be jarring for the audience.
In this instance, yeah, because it was so sort of on the fly. So we didn't have a lot of choice. We didn't have a long enough. We were constrained by the length of the cable, if I remember correctly, because we were out of long cables.
15 foot was the longest we had at that point.
Right. So you start there because, you know, like our friend Jonathan, who came and helped us on the first day, he was showing us a really beautiful setup he did, I think maybe for Walmart or something like that. That was establishing shot. And then I believe, if I remember correctly, his cutaway was on like a 18 degree angle or something like that. It was like really shallow. Mm-hmm. It was like this beautiful sort of shot, almost side shot with just a little tiny bit of angle towards, you know, the front of the stage. And so we just didn't have the cord to try anything like that.
Yeah, we couldn't get that close. Because dear audience, if you're imagining the stage as being sort of a line, and now we're calculating angles coming out of it so that straight on sort of establishing shot, that's 90 degrees because we are 100% perpendicular to that stage, that is that plane, that line.
Mm-hmm.
And then 18% would be if we like came up just a little bit off of that stage line that's existed, and getting, yeah, like Jess was saying, that sort of just like almost at the side of that person's face.
Yeah. And when you have a nice camera and a good telephoto lens to be able to do that, you can get a really nice depth of field, which is the name for if you're watching TV, right? And let's say Joe is the primary object that my camera is focused on. The background, whatever is in his background, is just a little bit out of focus. That's called depth of field in camera and lens stuff. And it looks really beautiful. That also we didn't really have the chance to play around with because I only have two lenses for the Lumix. One's a prime, and one's telephoto. And the prime lens we just were too far away. It, the, my prime lens does have a really nice depth of field. It's super beautiful, but it's much better for low light and like getting a little closer to things. We were so far away that we had to use the telephoto and it didn't have that same depth of field. But look, it looked different enough, as you said.
It let us cut away.
Exactly. It let us cut away. And it also ended up being, we sort of were able to position it so that it could kind of double as an audience cam, especially for breaks when we were like, we want something on screen during these big, long 10-minute breaks that gives you a sense of what you're a part of, you know? And we were able to double that camera to sort of capture the rest of the room on those breaks. We put a really nice overlay over that, but I'm getting ahead of myself.
Yeah, really pretty stuff. All right, so we've got our two cameras set up so that we can cut back and forth and make it a little bit more interesting for the audience. We've got our presentation coming in, which I think may be helpful to say that coming out of the system that they were using, I can't remember the exact piece of tech that they were using, but we had to come out via an SDI hookup. But the ATEM requires an HDMI input, so we intermediated it by using a decimator, a really cool piece of technology that allows you to take SDI feeds and convert them to HDI feeds, allows you to loop that SDI feed, allows you to take an HDMI and convert it back to SDI if you need. Really cool piece of technology, and allowed us to get the signal from their board and into the format that we needed for our live switcher.
Yeah, and I might note, if this is all making your eyes crossed, if you have someone technical on your team or you are working with us, it's the first time you sort of put all this together. It can be a lot. There's a lot of names for a lot of devices and types of cords, but it really is a repeatable process. It never changes. Audio, visual, the way we hook those things in, there's a little bit of variation depending on what camera, what generation, but for the most part, it's kind of the same recipe, just done a tiny bit differently each time. It gets easier once you sort of have a handle on all these bits and bobs.
Yeah, I feel like there's four of each thing. There's like four different types of cables or four different types of camera angles or four different types of that. And it's all just about mixing and matching them based on what is actually on the ground. So it's actually HDMI and actually SDI. Mm-hmm. Great. We have the converter for that. Mm-hmm. So you build up a stock of the various tools that you need and cables and converters, and then anything becomes possible.
Was it Marco? One of our tech directors was like, oh yeah, we keep like 100 decimators in stock or something. Remember that? It was Jonathan, maybe.
Probably Jonathan.
Yeah, and he was like, we just have a bazillion decimators because you always need 10 of them.
Yeah, because you never really know what you're walking into on site.
Yeah.
You always need to be able to adapt on the fly.
Yep.
But as Jess was saying, all that adapting and all those tweaks and changes, it's all within a small ballpark of what's possible.
Yeah. All right. So then with the audio, I know Jonathan set up a lot of that rather than us, but do you recall any of the specifics?
Yeah, so they were coming out of their mixing board. I believe it was a Behringer, but I can't remember exactly which
you're right.
Make.
Yep.
And I think we didn't have a cable that we needed or wanted on day one. Mm. And so we were coming out via quarter inch because we had to get down to an eighth inch or, 3.5 millimeter into the ATEM. So a little headphone jack, essentially. Mm. So I think, we were coming out of the board. And it wasn't ideal because we wanted to come out via the XLR, but we didn't have the right cable.
That's because of audio quality, right? We just get better audio quality.
Yeah. So on day two, the wonderful audio technician, this guy named Omar, brought in the cable that we needed, converted us from XLR down to an eighth inch, and allowed us to get direct audio. And I believe he made us a separate mix that was mirroring the in-house mix, but allowed us to adjust those levels specifically for the digital audience.
Which, it can't be understated, is so tasty if you can make that happen. It's really helpful. Not even just like because volume obviously changes when you're listening in a room and listening on a screen, but also the quality of the audio changes a little bit. And when you're doing something live, I like to have a little bit of like reverb, a little bit of room effect on the audio feed for the live stream so that the live stream's not hearing that sort of like dry mic straight to computer sound, because then it sounds like a movie. It doesn't
really
sound
sterile.
Live. Yeah, totally. So that's just like a little aside that I think is fun.
Mm-hmm. Super fun. And then so our sort of final visual input that we had was actually a whole separate laptop that was running a really cool presentation program called PVP. And we're using that to input event cards, videos, and various overlays to give people lower thirds with their names on them as they came up onto stage. So that was a very fun source that we usually keyed in using a chroma keyer. So they were all on pretty green backgrounds that allowed us to review them, remove those layers, and then just have that cute little graphic that was animating in their name that would come up over either camera one or camera two, depending on which shot we were in.
Yeah, I love that. And that's a great transition over to the fourth component of what we were dealing with on this, which is, of course, the digital audience and what we were doing for them and how we...
Wait, who? There was a digital audience this
whole time? Yeah, there were like a group of people. Mm. Yeah, I know. So I think about in this particular instance with DSOA, we sort of looked at them in three buckets. What can we do with overlays, like you were just saying, on the broadcast screen to make it feel exciting, to include them, whatever, you know, that all that is. We can talk about that. We did a ton of work, obviously, in how we engaged through the chat. So that's the second bucket. And then the third is what we ended up asking the live talent to do to include the digital audience when they were on stage as well. Is there anything else big that I missed that we could talk about?
Maybe we could just start quickly with like the mechanics of what was actually even happening, what technology we use.
Yeah.
And we'll use that to transition in.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, so all that fun tech that we were bringing into our live stream switcher, the A10 Mini Pro, was being ported out to a Vimeo. So specifically, Vimeo Premium is the account level that you need in order to do that. Mm. And the ATEM can be set up to, stream directly from that machine. So it's a little supercomputer in there as well as a live stream switcher that lets you send out your broadcast directly to YouTube, Facebook, any sort of RTMP source. And so we brought it out to a Vimeo, which was the destination ultimately for all of those attendees that couldn't make it in person but really wanted to be part of it digitally.
Yeah. And so we were working with screen and chat, and that was about it. So working with starting with the screen, we thought about the overlays in a couple different ways. Just to reiterate what Joe said, obviously adding lower thirds so that you could, know who was on screen. And I was thinking a little bit about the mechanics of that for a digital audience. And I think theoretically, why doesn't the in-person audience need lower thirds? And that's the question I was asking myself. And I think at the end of the day with the digital audience, it's so much more likely that they are going to get distracted and miss something. Mm. That is one of the reasons I like lower thirds a lot, and why in, the best case, we're throwing them a couple times across someone being on stage.
Yeah.
So that if someone leaves and comes back, they can catch up to who the heck they're watching.
Yeah. So I challenge that the audience in person doesn't need that just as much.
That's fair.
That they're also checking their phones or scribbling something down or chatting with the person next to them. And then they're like, wait, who is this?
Yeah.
What? I didn't hear. Yeah. I wasn't listening. Yeah. Don't tell anyone.
No, it's so true.
So to have it up on that sort of image magnification screen and things like that, I think it's super valuable.
I agree. And actually, it's worth mentioning, this was a pretty simple application, and they were not doing camera to iMag in the room. But on bigger things like Amplify, where we are doing iMag, it's actually simplest for the tech team to be throwing the exact same thing to both places, right? Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But in this instance, we threw some lower thirds on, which were really nice. And then we did a bunch of thinking after the first break. We did this really quickly. We got pulled in very last minute. And so we hadn't really, we didn't know the full sort of breakdown of what was actually going to happen on the ground. And it was evident really quickly that there were going to be these 10-minute, 15-minute breaks, for everybody to go to the bathroom, get coffee, work sessions that happened a lot. So we just sort of thought on the fly about how to make those a superpower instead of a weakness, which I think is what is looked at often in digital broadcasts. What are we going to do about the part that no one wants to watch at home, And for us, the answer sort of ended up being in a combo platter of that audience cam that we were talking about with a really cool overlay that was, we took the transparency down on a little bit, that said, we'll be right back, I think, right?
Yeah, we'll be right back, and then work.
Or work session.
Work session.
Yeah, work time or whatever for the work ones.
Yeah.
So you were looking at this cool pink, which is one of the main colors of DSOA, 50% opacity overlay that says we'll be right back. But then you could see, because it was partially transparent, all of the buzz and hubbub going on in the room, as well as hear a little bit of it.
Yeah, we pulled in a little audio from the camera that was set up in the middle of everything. And so we turned on the audio channel that was coming from that camera. And so picked up a little bit of that room noise.
Yeah. And then we combo plattered that with the chat and our strategy on the chat. So I think we could probably move over to that if you want.
Chat. I think interesting to reiterate that the digital experience was you know, arguably flat, right? It's a video and it's a chat, but you can do so much with those two things. If that's all you have access to, you can still make a really exciting, really interesting, really fun and compelling digital experience that brings people together to interact around what's going on that screen through the chat. So I think for anyone out there who is thinking like, oh, well, like I only have a YouTube page, or I only have a this, or I only have a that, you can do really cool and exciting things with just those simple tools, just those really sort of palatable and approachable tools.
Yeah. Yeah. So when we were working inside the chat, and this sort of evolved across the weekend as we got to know those digital audience members a little better through their, you know, chat avatar, some of the techniques and sort of like principles we applied and how we worked through the chat, because we were in the chat as DSOA as well. Spoiler alert, don't tell anyone. One is just personalization, right? And like I talk about this a lot, but like tricking a person who is alone in their living room into feeling like they're being seen, and tricking in the good way, right? Like not tricking in the bad way. So the person in the chat that's the representative of DSOA seeing people, inside quotes, right? Mm-hmm. Like calling them out, recognizing when someone's repeat, you know, said something really smart, you know, more than once, I don't know, whatever it was. That's one technique and principle that we applied. What's one on your list?
Yeah, I really like encouraging the community to help each other.
Yeah.
So you have, oh, hey, I miss what she said, or oh, what was that book that she was talking about? You know, referring to like the speaker that was on stage, and you can't rewind the presentation and go backward. But someone in the chat who is, you know, just feeling like connected to the community is like, oh, I heard it. I'll type in and say it was this book. And then having the representative from DSOA in this instance say like, thanks, Helen. That was awesome. So glad you could jump in and sort of like drop that information, because it helps to sort of decentralize and de-stress the one individual who's probably in the chat from DSOA, and empower the whole community of people to be helping each other, responding to each other, dropping thoughts and notes and feelings, without it having to just come from DSOA.
Yeah, and that was so prevalent across this entire experience. And what I love particularly about it is we've been talking a lot recently on a project we're working on about the principles of community management, which like number one is you have an explicit need you're gathered around, which for DSOA is, you know, I guess we need to be better studio owners and learn how to want to do it. And the secondary one is, how do we help each other? And that way you just described that, like, it goes so far to explain what we saw happen across the 3 days with this digital audience, which was a self-organizing of an identity and a self-organizing of their own sort of sub-events for the digital audience only. Such as like recap Zooms, you know what I mean? Or getting together during one of those work sessions.
Yeah, breakouts.
Yeah, that DSOA had nothing to do with putting together.
Yeah, so much so that I think they even named themselves.
They did. They
remember
did.
What that name was?
Yeah, I do. I love it. Dream Team Livestream.
Yeah, so, you know, before even halfway through the first day, this identity came out of the digital audience. They were like, we are here. We are, you know, part of this event too. We're going to name ourselves.
Yeah.
And then like Joseph saying, downstream of all that was this self-organization that, you know, nothing was actively planned for the lunch break during day two. But Dream Team Livestream was like, hey, y'all, do you want to get on a Zoom breakout thing and hang out and talk about all the stuff that we just learned from that presentation?
Yeah. And that all is powered by just a couple of simple, simple things. One, put some thought into the broadcast and make it look nice and make it, you know, serve that digital audience so that it's enjoyable for them. So, and as soon as they start enjoying it, recognize them and interact with them and engage with them via the chat. Hopefully, as you mentioned, Joe, around and helping each other help each other. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you're enjoying it and you feel like you're helping other people and you have something in common with all of them, you get to that sort of organization and identity part of it, where it's all because you don't feel like you've been sort of, you're an afterthought as a digital audience. Mm-hmm. Right. But it didn't take us doing all kinds of fancy tricks to get there.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I almost said original sin, but there's probably many more other original sins in live digital audience development, but like a big sin is to consider or not think about that digital audience as a real audience, as real people who are really part of that community.
Yeah.
They are not sort of second class audience members. They are just as important as the in-room people, the in-person people, but they are a little harder to take care of, to treat, to incorporate, because we're just not used to it yet. We haven't figured out all the tricks. We haven't figured out all the ways that we want to engage with them.
Yeah.
So going that little extra effort, making the broadcast feel special, making it feel inclusive, making those audience members feel seen. So important.
Yeah. All right. And then the last little bit we did with that digital audience, which was really nice, was the founder of DSOA was really open to having some interactive moments that were not planned beforehand, again, because we came on so late. And those sort of happened two ways. Sometimes they were on stage where he would acknowledge the live stream. This is a tip I always give people for hosting. If you can specify, just grab one specific thing that happened in the chat and then reflect it back while you're on stage at the in-person thing. Like, that goes so far, right? Yeah.
They see us. We're here. Yeah. We're real.
Yeah.
I thought a really nice thing, too, in that realm was the founder of DSOA would pop into the chat as himself.
Yeah.
And say, hey, I am here. You know, he has like a really great connection with all of these people who are part of his community. They know him. They celebrate him. And he was there.
Him.
He showed up as himself and interacted with them because he cares about them. And he wants them to know that they aren't, you know, just avatars on the internet. They're the people that he knows and cares about.
Yeah. And then the other thing, I'm not sure if we actually ever ended up doing this because everything got so crazy, but
we
would certainly plan for it. We had those spare iPhones that I was talking about in the beginning. So like setting up a station for him or anyone else to come swing by, like as they come off stage or when they have a break to come just like chat with the, you know, digital audience during one of those breaks. It's so easy for us to switch to that iPhone as a video source, depending on what software you're using, but that's technical and stuff. And that's something like it got a little crazy, I think, during the day and it just never happened. But that's the sort of like other way that we think about like engaging in-person talent with the digital audience.
Yeah. Digital exclusive content, having that speaker even just come off and say hi. Right.
Totally.
So much. Just be like, hey, digital audience, like I see you. I hope you enjoyed that thing that I was just saying.
Yes.
I would like, can't wait to see you next time.
Yes. Which I want to take this one second to just say an idea that did not come from DSOA. It came from, I think, Amplify, that I'm obsessed with. That exemplifies what you just described. We were recapping, and I would totally do this with DSOA, right? Like, because the founder's pretty down to do interesting things and silly things. But so the host for Amplify was like, I want more. We were debriefing afterwards. She was like, I want to be able to talk straight to the digital audience, but I didn't ever know what camera you were on, right? Because it's unlike a TV studio where you've got producers behind all those cameras, we had PTZs hung up and there's a light when it's on, but you don't know which one we're switched to. You know what I mean? And I was like, oh, what if we do it like the Jon Stewart camera 3? You know? I wish you could see Joe going, I'm going to go to camera 3. And he like swings around.
Yeah. Invites the audience to meet him at camera 3, which gives the tech director a second to switch over
Absolutely.
That camera.
Absolutely. I think that is such a clever device. I think my own idea is such a clever, but I didn't invent it.
Jon Stewart's idea.
Yeah, Jon Stewart's, which by the way, another aside, I just watched his acceptance speech from last night for the Mark Twain Prize, and you should definitely watch it. It's really good.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's
Noted.
Super good. He's great. But anyway, that's a great way to like incorporate all the things we did with DSOA and even make it a little more fun and special, right? Because that has a little bit of, what is the right word? Like frivolity is not what I've, or fancifulness. Do you know what I mean? But it's a little.
It's playful.
It's playful and it's just for the digital audience.
Yeah. I like too. It's one of those bridges between the audiences.
Right?
Yeah.
Because
it's really easy for the digital audience to recognize and acknowledge the presence of the in-person audience. They see them, right?
Yeah.
They see their heads over the top of certain camera angles.
Yeah.
But it's a little bit harder for the in-person audience to see, quote unquote, and acknowledge the presence of the digital audience.
Right.
Which is important to know that both of those are operating. So a couple of the ways being like, there is a camera operator actually moving around in space, you know, which makes it feel cool.
Yeah.
Right? And then as well, the host of Amplify calling out the digital audience in such a way that brings all of our shared attention to it.
Yeah.
People on the internet also enjoying this. That's cool.
There's a Hopin report that just came out on engagement and hybrid things and all that stuff. I think it literally came out today and I was skimming through it and they sort of propose just give up trying to cross your audiences over at just design experiences for each of them. And I will say this until the day I die over and over and over again. I don't know if you have to like design and have all the kinds of crazy crossover experiences, but I do know you have to have a sense that you're part of something bigger than yourself.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Yeah. Don't give up. Don't give up on blending the audiences. I think to Hopin's point, yeah, maybe you don't need like active video chatting booths between in-person and digital, right? Like feels heavy-handed, feels clunky. How much use is it actually going to get when there's a live human 5 feet to your left that you could talk to? But that doesn't mean you shouldn't have those two groups of people know and acknowledge and respect the fact that they both exist.
Yeah.
And make it feel, kind of delightful, the surprise and delight idea of like, I am part of something bigger. Whoa, it's amazing that there was someone right now, you know, in Bangalore, watching, consuming, interacting, is part of this, right? Contributing, right? And you're just like, wow, that's crazy. This is huge.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. It's one of the reasons, too, I think, I'm thinking back to like even bigger productions we've done, why I'm so big on if you have a remote guest, well, A, having a remote guest, and specifically having a remote guest interact in real time with an in-person that is just in through like Zoom or Hangouts or whatever, Google Meet, because when you don't fancy it up, they become the avatar for the digital audience. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think just even that little subconscious bit says, I matter. I, as a digital audience member, matter so much. They even brought one of us into the, you know, the show.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah. All right. Well, so, and so that's sort of like that whole layer one of how we sort of approached this particular 3-day, really cool summit or retreat. The layer two piece that I think is really interesting is a conversation that started to emerge around what does a hybrid component of this mean in the future for this company? And specifically, what I think is interesting, a company who doesn't need to make revenue on this particular event, right? This is a benefit for revenue they're already receiving for a membership, right? They being DSOA. And that really, I thought, made the conversation and the sort of like brainstorming really, really interesting because it's so different than so much of the stuff we're building for on a regular basis.
Yeah, absolutely. It comes back to that early and important question in any of these conversations, like, what are the goals? What are we actually trying to do here? I think recently I've been calling that, what's the what? Like, just what's the what?
Yes.
Like, just get it down on paper. What is the what here?
Yeah.
And like Jess was saying, this event, this inner circle retreat, was a moment in time to bring all these people together who had opted into a certain level of status or subscription, and they weren't individually paying for this one specific event. You know, it wasn't a ticketed event. I didn't pay $25 to watch that movie. You know, I was invited to join it as a special member of this community.
And pay my travel and hotel.
Yeah.
Hashtag Miami's expensive.
That too. That was even before airfare was insane.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, God.
Oh, table that for a second of like, airfare being crazy is going to impact these styles of events.
Oh, right.
People are going to be like, I can't afford a $900 plane ticket.
Yeah, have you guys right known? Have you noticed this? We were looking at plane tickets for a thing we're doing across the stuff. It's so fucking expensive.
Yeah. I bought a ticket to San Francisco recently. Actually, San Jose, because it was cheaper.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was still crazy expensive. And like, that's one of those places I flew a whole lot before the pandemic. And I was like, yeah, this is normally like $200 to $300. And it was easily like double or triple that.
I have to make a note to write about this because that'll be a good link. And not only the price of the ticket, but the mess you end up in, like our friend and collaborator, Jermaine, who, you know, bought his extremely expensive plane ticket to get back from KC to New York on Saturday last week in order to make an event we were all supposed to go to on Sunday. And United canceled 4,000 flights.
Yeah.
And so he didn't get in. And so I think that too, like that unreliability of travel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh.
Because you're not planning an extra night in a hotel just in case United cancels 80% of their flights.
Or even excited or interested in the idea that you might end up having to sleep at the fucking airport.
Love sleeping at the airport.
Never had to do it. Thank God. Oh my God. Anyway.
I've had to do that once.
So layered with...
And aside.
Yeah. With DSOA, and I think any of you all who have similar situations, right? A big part of this conversation was we don't want to deter people from coming in person. Because we make it so easy for them to be digital participants. And the founder had a lot of very specific, like metric driven, you know, reasons for that were really valuable and made a ton of sense to both of us. And so that got us thinking about like, what ways can we turn this into a superpower instead of a weakness to maybe grow this program instead of just provide a replacement for being in person.
Yeah. And I love too that the old Broadway, I don't want to cannibalize our in-person audience.
Yeah.
Extends well beyond the theatrical community. But yeah, so we got to thinking after, you know, talking about what are the goals, right? What do we want this event to be? We're not selling tickets to it. It's really, it's a way to cement the value of membership in this organization. Mm-hmm. And so there's a huge value in being there in person and that like the kinetic energy that happens between human beings when they're sharing space. And so we got to thinking about like these different groups of audience members, and we kind of boiled it down to four, kind of five of like, okay, there are people who are showing up to this thing, hell or high water, right? It doesn't matter what tickets cost, doesn't matter what stage of this pandemic we are in, they are going to be there. Yeah. And so we're like, not 100%, we're not particularly worried about that group, right? If you offer them a live stream, they're like, no.
Yeah.
No, thank you, no. I'll be coming to Miami. See you soon. But then it gets down into other people who are like, okay, is this person on the edge, right? They would like to go in person, but if you offered them the live stream, they would actually choose the live stream instead. So how do we, you know, encourage that person to, no, you should still go in person. You're going to get a lot of value out of that. Mm-hmm. Like, don't fall back on this. And then going one layer down, there's the person who is not showing up in person, hell or high water. You know, that's, hey, we're in a new stage of the pandemic. Hey, the cost of this ticket is way too high. So they're not, you're not losing out on that person showing up in person. So it's really that middle category of people that you're like, okay, let's think about them, because they're the ones who might be swayed or influenced or changed based on the availability of a live stream. Mm-hmm. And sort of inside of that now is this one other group that I'm trying so desperately to remember, and I just cannot. But if you have it.
There was like a double where we got around to and trying to mm-hmm. solve for that middle group, which was interesting and really felt contentious with the DSOA team for reasons like, again, that we totally understood, was it got us thinking about two other groups that fall into the growth, like an acquisition side of DSOA, which is people who haven't joined yet, but are part of their bigger, wider programs, because this is like a level up program.
Yeah.
As well as it was mentioned, I think across this, there's an audience of like those folks who are going to come to Miami no matter what, that run dance studios, being able to extend some of this content across to their peoples back in their hometown and where their studio is, that those, you know, that are going to benefit in running the business, I think, from, you know, having access to some of this.
Yeah. Maybe I can find it, because that was category number five, what you were describing.
Oh, geez, sorry.
So yeah, by identifying those different groups of people, we were able to sort of hone in on like, what do we actually need to talk about? What's the actual strategy of designing what the next version of this live stream is going to be, with a specific focus on those two groups, right? The people who would be swayed away from going in person, which we don't want to do, but then also these other people who wouldn't have otherwise even been involved, mm-hmm. but we can get them in, and like you were just alluding to, give them a little sneak peek, mm-hmm. give them a little taste, give them a little, oh, I want to be part of that community. I want to, you know, upgrade my membership to now be able to come in person the next time. So actually taking digital audiences and converting them into in-person audiences.
Yeah.
What a concept.
You know, we love that. Yeah, so it's super fun. We like threw out a huge amount of ideas and different things that could or couldn't work. And it's because some of them didn't work. and it was really fun. And I think like at the end of the day, that's one of my favorite things about the live streaming part of what we do, is it's so scalable. Like it's the delivery mechanism is technology. So it's not like we can only, if we decide to live stream the whole thing, there's no other options. Like we as a team can do like two things at once, you know?
Yeah.
We could send the whole thing out just to one destination for people who already paid for it. And we could send only a little bit of that same thing out to a destination at the same time with the same equipment, no extra costs in like personnel and technology, mm-hmm. to another place where people who haven't paid for it yet get to be enticed by it instead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So instead of 3 days full of programmed content, you know, that second audience is getting just the keynote and maybe just one session. Mm-hmm. So they're getting to see it, taste it, feel it, but they're not getting the full value of it. So that they are, you know, we're effectively using the event that is happening live as a marketing tool, as an upsell tool.
Yeah. Although that gets me thinking about, and hadn't thought about this back when we did it, like how do you, the community layer of it and that funnel of community takes a deeper level of engagement. And how do you, if you're doubling and you're sending two feeds out, how do you also, as we know, the broadcast is not the only thing that like encourages community. So how do you give all those people only watching a little sliver of the broadcast also a little taste of the community that organizes mm-hmm. around this?
Yeah. Give everyone day one all together and then split it day two and three maybe.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. That way also the OGs like don't feel like they're just playing host to a bunch of people who don't really know all the lingo and the,
yeah.
you know, the vibe of a community. But because I think that's really interesting, right? At the end of the day, that's the funnel we want to build of like someone's coming to us from scratch. We want like a future where this exists everywhere. You're sending out a little bit of this to people who aren't a part of your thing. And then they're going to take that easy step to upgrade to the digital experience, mm-hmm. right? Because there's a lower barrier to entry. And then they're going to have so much fucking fun and they're going to learn so much that they're going to come in person, right? And that's just like this great wheel that just keeps spinning if you do it right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, let's go back to marketing funnels. This is live digital is a mid-funnel conversion tactic,
right?
You capture their attention via ads, via video recordings of this event. And that's really at the top of that funnel. Just capture that attention. Maybe they sign up at some mid-tier level or no level at all yet, but they're interested. They know what DSOA is. They're like, oh, I'm kind of interested in this. And the live element and the community element are what help to bring them down that funnel and bring them closer to conversion and maybe take them all the way to the end of the funnel and into conversion by giving them a little bit better taste of what it's like to be part of this community. Because, mm-hmm. you know, an asynchronous 30-minute video of a presentation that happened in person, cool, I understand what the content is, but I don't understand the feeling of
like.
Being connected to that community
yeah.
and the value of having 150 other people doing the same thing that I'm doing, all really warmly and like happily sharing their expertise. And like, that's what's going to hook someone.
Yeah.
That's what's going to sell someone.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's always been at the center of all of this, right? And why it's so clear, like how this started in theater, because they wanted to be a part of that, right? Like that's why we started doing any of this at all. And now I just so exciting that it extends out to associations, to content studios, to all anything that's looking and has a community, a wellness brand, whatever it is. People who are fans, who care, and who help each other when they come together. And that's a great guide for, I think, like putting live digital experiences together.
I agree. No notes.
No notes. Oh, well, we hope you enjoyed this episode of Tales from the Vault. It was fun reliving that because we're like 6 months away from having done that.
I'm impressed by both of our memories.
True.
We had literally zero notes up until that moment where I tried to search for those different audience types. And it was just like, that's actually a funny metric in its own right. Like, we enjoyed being there.
Yes, we did. Absolutely.
We enjoyed being part of that community. We enjoyed helping to bring together that community in such a way that it is burnt into the memory in a really nice place.
Yeah, it's true.
A really happy place.
Yeah, so thank you for listening and being a part of the get-together. And as you all know, the goal of this podcast is to bring people together and have these important conversations. So share this with someone who could benefit from a tale from a vault or who just wants a nice story burnt into their happy place. Is that what you said?
Yeah, I was thinking about like the different parts of the brain, but I don't actually know where memories get stored. But you know, the idea that like there'd be like a happy memory place and a sad memory place.
I love it.
I don't think that's real.
Yeah, think about Swarm Miami, except we also were there on the coldest day maybe in recent history ever.
Yeah, in like
in
the last
Miami.
Decade.
It was like 35 degrees. So it was mostly happy with one, why the fuck is this so cold? Anyway, share this episode with someone if you know someone who could benefit from it.
I'm Joe.
I'm Jess.
And we will see you back here next week.
Bye.